Blog Talk Radio.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. Legislation under consideration in the UK regarding armed forces personnel could limit accountability for war crimes if it's passed in its current form, UN Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet said on Monday. In a statement, the High Commissioner for Human Rights urged Parliament to heed warnings that the proposed new Overseas Operations Bill risks undermining key human rights obligations that lawmakers have previously agreed to. The bill could shield military personnel operating abroad from due accountability for acts of torture or other serious international crimes, Ms. Bachelet explained. In its present form, the UN Rights Chief said that the legislation potentially put it at odds with the 1949 Geneva Conventions and the Convention Against Torture. The bill is now reaching its final stages in the legislative process and will shortly be debated again by the House of Lords, the UK's upper house, where amendments may still be made. Reaching to the stars next, where the UN hopes that teaming up with astronaut Thomas Pesquet will bring solutions to growing hunger levels back on Earth. The partnership between Frenchman Pesquet and the Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, announced on Monday, comes as the FAO said that almost 690 million people are already going hungry today and that COVID-19 could leave another 132 million without enough to eat. Speaking from personal experience, Pesquet said that there was no escaping the need to cherish food and reduce waste on board the International Space Station, two things that were urgently needed to protect Earth today.
When you see the Earth initially, you're struck by how beautiful it is, and then you spend some time just absorbing and taking in the beauty, and then you start realizing that it's not always the case, and you see the clearings in the forest, you see the water pollution, you see the air pollution, you start seeing all those things, and then it makes you think quite a bit about just the impact of our activities on the planet.
Astronaut and FAO Goodwill Ambassador Thomas Pesquet speaking there, 60 years since Russian cosmonaut Yuri Gagarin became the first person to fly to space on the 12th of April, the International Day of Human Spaceflight. To Latin America now, where efforts are underway to tackle Chagas disease, a debilitating condition named the kissing bug, which is endemic to more than 20 countries and affects millions. The aim of the scheme is to eliminate mother-to-child transmission of the tropical disease in Bolivia, Brazil, Colombia, and Paraguay through testing and treatment programs that are currently unavailable. Here's Maurizio Cisne from the UN health agency UNITAID, speaking ahead of World Chagas Disease Day on Wednesday.
Chagas disease affects 6 to 7 million people a year across Latin America. It is a silent disease. It affects the poorest, the most vulnerable, and kills slowly. This project will be implemented by a consortium of partners led by the Oswaldo Cruz Foundation, Fiocruz in Brazil, and will focus on testing, treatment, and care through the systematic screening of women and their newborns.
About 2 million women of childbearing age are estimated to be affected by Chagas disease, which can be silent for decades and then re-emerge, causing long-term damage to the heart and gut. The virus is transmitted by the blood-sucking triatomine insect called Trypanosoma cruzi. It kills an estimated 10,000 people annually, with cases diagnosed as far away from Latin America as Spain. Daniel Johnson, UN News.
I think you actually got the call through to John Grant. John Grant is alive and well in Pennsylvania.
I'm still ticking. I'm here, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's something else, man. I tell you, listeners, you're popping up on thiscan'tbehappening.net. I don't know if it'll be up, if it's not there already. There's an article that John wrote about things I think the people out in the red states, like Kansas, would be most interested in seeing. I think this is a really good article, John, you put up, and it's congratulations, man. I think
you know, the kicker over the headline, which is, between the Q headspace and the hard place of history, U.S. history. And then the kicker is, right, and you'll get this in Kansas, Toto, we're not in Kansas anymore.
Right, no matter what they think. Yeah. Right.
What they think. Right. talk about
people out here. If you've got, if well, we can talk about whatever you want about, but if people out here who, I mean, look, it's been like a year and two months now, I guess, literally since March of last year. Many of my friends, a lot of us have fell out, you know. We don't know what our group of friends are doing half the time. And, you know, and now it's starting to, I don't know, melt off. I got my shot, so I'm able to go out a little bit and you know, and stop by. And I stopped by one of my friends, and I was just shocked. This guy was he said, well, I only wear a mask when I have to go out in crowded places, but, you know, basically I don't wear a mask anymore. And he started cussing Biden. And it was sort of a replay of what I heard years and years ago about Obama. And I was like, man, you sound like you've been up Q's ass, you know. And Q, listeners, is I'm referring to the QAnon phenomenon that largely was a big part of bringing together the so-called insurrectionists, the mob, on January 6th.
It certainly was used to foment the January 6th assault on that Capitol. Yeah, clearly.
I told my buddy, I said, it sounds like you've been up QAnon's ass, and he sort of chuckled. He says, I've been there. He's like, you know, he didn't talk about his loyalty or anything, how much he agrees with or anything like that. He just said, I've been there. And I was just sort of like thinking, and this is what is really influencing you to talk about Biden's plans, Now, I didn't get into the thing. It was like, well, did you take the check? I mean, Donald sent you a check, and then you got some more checks.
That's the big question there. Yeah, absolutely.
And he has two children of school age. I think one's in eighth grade.
Not wearing a mask, and are you tearing up that check when it comes in the mail? Yeah, period.
I didn't ask him that. Next time I will, now that I can circulate more freely. and I left on good terms. I did.
That's the way it should be. Absolutely. We need to talk across these lines. Disturbed. Yeah,
I
agree.
And I was disturbed because he's a local. I mean, he voted for me even though he's not a Democrat. He voted for me in elections, twice, and for the state house. And, you know, those are just perfunctory things to create public opinion for me. And I was just sort of struck, you know, by how easily when we're separated, alienated, we can't talk to each other as much as we want to, how people take on their own, people go their own ways, you know, it's just, you know, can't keep solid.
I'm sorry, go ahead,
After about an hour and a half yesterday, I was leaving there. And another thing, he had moved. He had to move down. He's trying to finance building a home out in the country like I have and our other buddies, because he wants to get out of the village because he just can't, you know, he likes to run around half naked half the time. You know what I mean? You know, he wants that freedom.
When I lived in South Dade County, Florida, my father and his three boys, when my great uncle came down, he's a sport, we all took great pride in being able to urinate on the front lawn all together, we were so rural. Freedom, dude.
Right. He sold his house. My understanding, according to him, is that he had to sell his house that he'd been in years, at least 10 years that I know of, and to finance the building of the let's call it farmhouse, although, you know, 10 acres like me, it's not really a farm, but his place that he's been.
Well, in the old school days, it's a farm, you know. I mean, now it's not a mechanized factory farm like today.
No, it's, yeah. So he's on the right track, and I'm real happy that he did it. But he had to move down in this interim period while he's, you know, getting the house. And I was, you know, I said, I think he was a little, you know, I think he was a little bashful because he was you know, sort of, he was solid working class, both he and his wife, and I would say that they're upper, you know, I mean, they get paid good money, you know, when they, you know.
Right,
and I was sort of shocked.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're comfortable. They have a, and they have pensions and things like that, but, you know,
mm-hmm.
and health, good health insurance. You know, they're really pretty well off as far as the working class go. So I was sort of, but I asked him. I said, "Well, how is it living in this little house here? You know, down the street from the old place you had?" You know, he says, "Well," he says, and he says, "I don't want you to go in there. It's pretty messy." He says, "We're all packed in. Our two kids and us. That it's only a two bedroom place, but it's only for a while. You know, we should be out of here by the end of summer." And I was like, "Oh, that's great, man." Yeah. But as I drove away, and I realized that he was reverting to his old things of, you know, anti-liberalism, anti-democracy, very centered around. Centered around the white culture, and it's a very white, very white culture out here. All I could think about was, I can't wait to give him this article in that you wrote, because I think it's listeners, go to thiscan'thappening.net. And check it out, because it's a really...
Well, let me sort of sketch out what it is, since we're talking about it. It's basically, on some level, it's a review of two HBO documentaries. Let's start there. But it also gets into a lot of history and ironies and arguments and all that kind of stuff. But what motivated me was I saw this six-part documentary called Q Into the Storm by somebody named Cullen Hoback, a filmmaker. He's made a film on Facebook before. And he was basically trying to track down who Q is or was. And he therefore deals with a lot of characters who are instrumental in the Q movement. You know, they're in Sapporo, Japan, they're in Manila, Philippines, they're all over, and he interviews a lot of other people, and he spends a lot of time traveling on airplanes, obviously. And he follows these people over a number of years, and out of that he gets, video and things to make this film. And during this film, he's dealing with Jim Watkins, who's a veteran, American veteran, who lives in Manila and owns a pig farm, and his son, Ron Watkins, who is a very smart fellow. He's part Asian, so his mother must be maybe Filipino or something, not sure, maybe Japanese. And his father owns 8chan, which was sold to him by this guy in a wheelchair, and to be cut to the chase to describe this guy with a brittle bone disease in his 30s, it's like he's a blob of flesh with a head and two hands that are just lightning fast on a laptop. I mean, he's a brilliant guy with this terrible disease, and he runs around in his wheelchair kind of headlong with his Pomeranian dog in his lap, you know? And very compelling, super, super disabled character that has used the technology of the internet, cyberspace, if you will, to empower himself. And I sort of describe him as essentially a cyborg. You know, he's human and technology mixture, you know? And of course, all these are the three principles. They break up after Fred Brennan, the disabled man, decides he can't abide by what these guys are doing anymore, Jim and Ron Wilt Watkins, because 8chan, which, again, Brennan sold to them, is now a featured for, you know, several mass shooters put things on 8chan. And then it followed up with all these glorious people glorifying this violence, and little the disabled man Fred Brennan parted ways. I can't abide by this. And so there was some tension there. So what basically, to cut to the chase, Cullen Hoback outs Ron Watkins as Q. Although Ron Watkins is he sort of wants Hoback to know he's Q. He's smart enough to pull off all this Q stuff. But at the same time, while he reveals he's entrapped and reveals it in an interview, there's no question, he still then denies it, and it's, you know, publicly denied. You know, the same way Donald Trump would overtly deny an obvious truth that there's no question about. It's true. Okay, so that's one documentary. Well, then about a week later, HBO cranks up this documentary by a Haitian filmmaker in his 60s who made a number of films, and he's made this film called Exterminate All the Brutes, which is a reference from Joseph Conrad's Heart of Darkness about Kurtz and, you know, a colonial subject or a colonial operator in the Congo and all the horrors, you know. And it famously, you know, as he's at the end, he says, the horror, you know. And, of course, Apocalypse Now was designed on that, structured on that novel. And at one point, he says about the Africans he's colonizing, you know, and all their savagery, in his view, exterminate all the brutes, right? Well, that's a famous phrase. And so he titles his piece on that. And it's basically a devastating deconstruction of European colonial and American imperial history of how colonizing the, you know, darker-skinned third world people of the world. And his thesis is fully documented that the West and Europe and the United States, when push comes to shove, when they're trying to dominate these colonial places, they exploit mechanized modes of death, you know, from the machine gun, the development of the machine gun and bombs, and, you know, we know the whole litany leading up to ultimately, of course, the atomic bomb, Hiroshima and Nagasaki and all that kind of stuff. You know, we know those. I mean, this is a tale that's been told many, many, many times in many, many different ways. But the timing of this essay film is just incredible, you know, coming in the time Black Lives Matter and all the police shootings and this incredible trial going on in Minneapolis and one thing after another, you know, January 6th. And, of course, we're, you know, the question I raise is that, you know, we're in a virtual cyber civil war. Is it going to transform into an actual shooting civil war? We're all sort of sitting on tenterhooks waiting to see how that transpires. So this, you know, I put the two in my mind. I put the two together, and the combination, they worked on each other. It was devastating. So just so you can see kind of, you know, what I'm up to in the thing.
Yeah,
and of course, well, you know, raises, go ahead.
It's an incredible, I mean, and there's layers, like the documentaries you reference and describe, there's layers of it, because then you bring in this guy who I'd never heard of, the science fiction writer. I'd heard the title, I'd never read the book.
Neuromancer?
Yeah, Neuromancer. And this guy, is it Gibson? I think
William Gibson. Well, the story, in fact, there's a link you can click on William Gibson after the fact explaining how he wrote the book, why he wrote the book, and the what he went through to come up. And he coined, in 1984, when he wrote this book, sci-fi book, he coined the term cyberspace. The book is called Neuroman, William Gibson. Well,
yeah,
I was writing
a
novel at the time on a soldier, a U.S. soldier in Honduras, as a photographer during the Contra War, and I wanted a character to be a science fiction reader, and I didn't read, or I don't even like science fiction, so I decided to read one book, and I read William Gibson's Neuromancer. And it always stuck with me, this idea of this young character protagonist sort of lost in this computer space, which again, Gibson coins the term cyberspace in that novel, a science fiction novel. And the whole question of the novel is this space where he's having these adventures, is it real or is it not, you know? Again, in that novel in 1984, it was science fiction. Well, if you look at how Fred Brennan works on the Internet, in cyberspace, if you will, well, this documentary makes it quite clear the cyberspace is no longer science fiction. It's reality, and we're living in it.
Yeah.
And we're engaged in it. We have all the problems and the dark web and, you know, con men, flim-flam jobs going on, you know, hello, from the President of the United States on down, that, you know, living in the Internet is now a frightening, maneuvering the Internet, frightening cyberspace. It's a frightening aspect of our lot, one of the frightening aspects of our lives. You know, and so this is kind of the position, you know, that I place all this in. And then of course, if you look at this idea of cyberspace as a place, if you will, you know, it's all made out of zeros and ones and, you know, in computer talk, but yet it's a place that we live in and we engage in, and it's real. I look at these people like Ron Watkins, Jim Watkins, Fred Brennan, as, you know, why are they, you know, in a metaphoric sense, of course, they're basically colonizers of this place called cyberspace, you know, analogous to the colonizers who colonized, you know, Congo and all these other places. It gets very complex, you know.
One, an anecdote. First, I had a buddy of mine. We were both rock and roll. We loved the Clash, the band,
okay.
The Clash.
Sure.
And this goes back to the 80s, about that time, early 80s and late 70s. And on one of the records, it was one of the last one called Sandinista. That's the cover of the album.
Gotcha.
That's the name of the album, Sandinista. And my buddy, I remember, he's gone now. He died a few years ago, but scratched in handwriting, and we never knew how they did it. I'm sure they had a machine that did it. But on the album, inside, you know, on that, if you remember the vinyl records, listeners, there's a little blank space for where the paper core and the actual audio track ends, and there's a little blank space. And in that blank space, now we were young. This is late 70s, early 80s. And it was handwritten. It looked to be handwritten. I'm sure some sort of robot did it, but it says, "No one can hear you scream." I don't know why. It was just the coolest thing. Because you wouldn't even notice it until you got the album. You looked at it real carefully. Wait a minute. No one can hear you scream. Yeah, boo. And then my buddy, he was already into primitive computers. Okay, but after, I mean, he may have read this thing because this book you're talking about, because he did a you know, on your emails, listeners, you can set up a thing that signatures, you know, you have a signature at the end of it, and it could say anything you want. On his emails for over for years, decades, you know, his email, and on his things, he would, you know, on his stationary hard copy, he would, in cyberspace, everybody can hear you scream. That's what that was his sort of.
Yeah, there you go.
I wanted to relate that to you because if you're talking about, he must have read that book. I have never read it, but yeah, I always wondered, well, where did he come up with cyberspace? And where, I think you've answered that for me. And it's a fascinating thing you're discussing, because I think he realized that, my late buddy.
Right.
He realized that this was happening. It was becoming a real thing. It was no longer just people playing games, you know, early primitive games on an arcade or something, you know. It was going to go places, you know. And he was the one that really taught me how to desktop publish. He taught me the software and how to do it. Gave me he's a very gifted guy. I mean, he got computer certificates, you know, before anyone knew what that meant. I'm not even sure if I know to this day what it means, but you know, he was way ahead of his time. He was way ahead of his time on this stuff, and that's where I heard the term cyberspace first. And it I had to share that with you and the listeners because,
well, of course,
you know,
yeah, again, it's originally coined by William Gibson in Neuromancer, and that world is no longer science fiction. And to me, that's a pretty profound observation as we look forward. So the Q documentary, in that sense, is I described it to someone the other day as between the Q documentary and the Exterminate documentary, that the Q documentary was like the prologue of a very long novel, right? And the Exterminate All the Brutes documentary was like the epilogue of a very long novel that had been told many times, you know, and that and that these are the two different animals. And, you know, the history is the 800-page novel. But the, you know, one is looking backwards and one is looking forwards. You know, Q is looking forwards like, God, you know, what does the future hold for us when, you know, people that we normally associate with the term nerds are very much empowered, in, you know, by this internet. And the power that they have is their ability to stir up a mob and remain anonymous. You know, that's one thing that really irks me about, you know, the internet. It's like nobody has a, you don't know who the goddamn hell is talking to you, you know. And so I go way out of my way every time I weigh into the internet. I identify myself. Maybe, you know, some people would say that's stupid, you know, but I think it's an issue of integrity here that, you know, we need to identify, you know. I don't know if there's a way of, it's oppressive or what, I don't know, a way of insisting that people who weigh in on the internet are identifiable. In other words, if you refuse to identify yourself, there are traces, tracks, things embedded in your message that does identify you. Now, that leads to a cyber police state? I don't know. It's very complicated, I grant you. But I think the internet, the anonymity on the internet, as this documentary makes quite clear, has potential for real, real problems and violence and things like that. We'll see. You know, as I speak, it's not implausible, given, you know, this kind of dynamic, you know, of anonymously driven cyber death squads and, you know, whatnot. You know, you look at El Salvador in the 80s, it wasn't, you know, it was secret communications amongst people, but it wasn't computer, cyber communication. January 6th was fomented by cyber in cyberspace. So, again, all very interesting, all very complicated, all very much in need of serious, smart discussions, and of course, polarized world of simplicities, it's hard to get, you know.
Yeah. Well, the thing I like about your article and the general, the article itself is it's accessible, and I think that's what the key thing is for people today is accessibility.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think just like because when we, I'll be honest with you, in 1979 or I think it came out in around 1984 really, that Sandinista album by the Clash.
Yeah, of course, that's when the Sandinistas were a big deal. Yeah.
But we didn't know. We didn't know. Of course, we knew, being old time commies, you know, we knew about imperialism. But we didn't know. I'm talking about my buddy and I and other people.
We didn't
understand what was going on with Sandinista. And I'm not even sure.
Well, in 1984, of course, I was deported. I went to Nicaragua, and six of us went to Tegucigalpa to talk about labor problems and murders and things. And we were deported from Honduras because the Contra War was going on there against Nicaragua. And we spoke, you know, one of our people spoke at a rally in Tegucigalpa.
Right.
And they cut off, the military came in and cut off the radio station that was recording it. And, you know, they arrested us and put us on a plane back to Nicaragua, where we were scheduled to, you know, where we were, I was with a group, a larger group. In 1984, I was aware of the Sandinistas. Right?
We were. We were not. We just knew there was horrible things going on down there, and we were just sort of coming alive at that point, you know. Vietnam was over with, you know, and South Africa, that was our big thing back then, was South Africa and to divest against apartheid. Yeah, that was the only real mass thing we heard going on. But when this album came out, it opened up our, you know, eyes, and we started paying much more attention to it. That's accessibility. When you live in a deeply conservative culture, overwhelmingly white, and religious, you know, you literally had to go and search out people who may or may not have a pamphlet or some information about things that are going on. Now you can do it on the, if you have the will.
You know?
And I think there's a parallel to back then to now. I think there's a lot of people in deep red areas, and very conservative areas, very conservative white religious areas. Let's put all those
certain.
Conservative white Christian Arabs, who are still suffocating and they don't even know it. You know, they can't even scream in cyberspace. Yep. They don't even know. They work, they do the right thing, but they don't have a lot of time for. So they take what.
Right.
So Donald Trump.
Right.
Donald
you got
Trump
it.
Yeah. January 6th. You know that Donald Trump was something that it was a brass ring. I'm going to be rich someday.
Yep.
Just like Donald Trump, and I'm going to use the same goddamn language Donald Trump uses, and it's liberating to vote for this guy. I don't care if he's a lie, if he's only a millionaire, not a billionaire. I don't care about that. He pisses off the other people that I don't like, so I'm going to vote for him. You know, that's, and then it culminates 4 years later in January with the January 6th assault and riot on the Capitol. I mean, this is so important, I think.
Yeah,
I
agree.
That hits at your article, because you're in a way, and by the way, listeners, tonight on PBS, there will be another, by oh, I can't remember his name. I'm sorry. The guy who put together a whole series from Charlottesville all the way up on Frontline documentaries with ProPublica. There'll be a special on American Insurrection.
What channel? PBS.
Local PBS.
I want to check that out.
Frontline is notorious for people out here in the deeply conservative areas. You can also get it. Usually you can just go to Frontline's website after it's aired on the PBS, your PBS affiliates. It's available free to stream. You can stream it on your computer after the show. So it's American Insurrection, and it comes on with Frontline. And it's centering around January 6th. And I think there's too many liberals, or whatever you want to call them. I'm not sure. You know, people who voted for Joe Biden, let's put it that way. That's a general blanket. Okay.
Sure.
That are willing to put all that behind us. And it's like, well, it's all going to be better now. You know, and I really think, and I think they're underestimating.
I think so,
underestimating the deeply conservative areas. Bragging on this. Also, I was happy to see that you put a picture of Steve Bannon in your article, because Steve Bannon is becoming a major player on Newsmax, which is saturation propaganda out here. It's saturating the deeply conservative areas right now, because it's free.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be on cable. You can get it on Roku. You can watch it on your iPhone. You know. It has an app for phones. It's very accessible. And Bannon is on Newsmax at least four hours during the daylight hours, and they replay his six-hour stuff at night.
I didn't know that.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, and Bannon is like, he is there, and he's like calling Trump a government in exile. I mean, he's out there. I don't know.
Yeah.
And Go ahead.
Well,
today's Times
has two stories. One on DeSantis, the governor of Florida, and how he's considered now the if Trump doesn't run in 2024, you know, he's the guy right now that's top of the list. He seems to have really pulled off the success in Florida. Largely because he's very, very smart, apparently. We don't hear about it, but he has a science advisor. He reads a lot of science, so he's not a know-nothing jerk in that sense. But he's an opportunist, conservative, Trumpian Republican, of course. But at the same time, he's released a couple of black men who were in prison. And, you know, he's done, half a dozen things that would be characterized as liberal, you know, although they kept kind of quiet. But because he is the one who may be anointed to be the Trump figure for 2024, the eye is on him. The other article was about Trump, you know, at Mar-a-Lago as the headquarters of the Trumpian Republicans, and how he's insisting that he's still in charge of the head of the Republicans and all that. Well, a lot of people are, you know, being very cautious. You know, they're making sure they show fealty to Donald Trump. At the same time, they cover their ass in case Donald doesn't make it or ends up in jail or suddenly the gloss goes off him and people lose interest in him and all that. At the same time that this movement that he began, you know, other people want to lead. And DeSantis apparently at this point is considered the lead person to do that. But, you know, things may change by 2024. You can see. And, of course, Bannon is out there beating the bushes, behind all this. Keeping this Trumpian movement going, with a real base. I mean, 74 million people, as we know, voted for this guy, and we're going to see whether all of this you know, successful legislation. We're even infrastructure bill may be going through, and other bills with lots of money attached to it. We could argue. I mean, that you know, we live in a huge, unmanageable country with this an amalgam of, you know, any number of isms, including capitalism, socialism, fascism. We all have little pockets of that.
Yeah.
You know, there's not right. one absolute ism that runs this goddamn
right.
huge place, you know. And and so, yeah, thanks to Biden, you know, we're getting a little balance. You know, they're beginning to throw a little, I hate to say it, socialism into the mix. You know, and of course, Donald Trump, he wants a little more fascism in the mix because it's all about authoritarian me and, you know, making the trains run on time and my way and all that. And so, you know, we're in the middle of this huge political struggle, and the question is going to be, 2022 is the first test, you know, whether Joe Biden's progressivism is actually benefiting enough of that 74 million people. You know, as you say, your friends who are, you know, have you taken that check or did you tear it up?
Yeah.
You know, well, with your mask that you're not wearing, are you tearing this check up or what?
Right.
No, I don't think you probably are. So
it's helping. Here's a growing thing. There's a growing thing out here. It's another thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of shocking, but there's a lot of people, young people, 40, 30, 40-somethings,
sure.
Working-class people who are refusing to take their shots. This guy also informed me last
time. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I don't need to get a shot. I don't need a shot, you know.
But how preposterous is that? I mean, look what I just said about Ron DeSantis. Ron DeSantis is doing everything he can, probably dishonestly as well, to be the new fill-in for Trump. But at the same time, unlike Trump, he's a very, very smart guy. He's reading science. He has a science advisor. You know, he heads one of the largest sunshine states in the country. So he's not a stupid man. So he does these liberal things without raising a lot of ruckus about it. He does that because he wants his state to be successful. And so, you know, he may be the perfect, you know, formula for a new Trump. I don't know. We'll wait and see. But at the same time, you know, Biden's, you know, amazingly progressive, according to what we're worried about. And so far, so good.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's going to be terrible on foreign policy and imperial issues. We know that. And, of course, there's a story in the Today's Times about Afghanistan.
Okay.
Afghanistan is done. We've lost. Period. It's over. You know, and the Taliban, the way they did with the Russians when they left in a vacuum and they left, the Taliban filled it because they are the local power to deal with. Well, there's a vacuum now. We've created this huge vacuum because the United States started this thing and can't finish it. And so we're pulling out, and the Taliban in a matter of years are going to sweep back in. I mean, it's inevitable. You can see the signs. Well, once again,
you
like
know what
in
I
Vietnam,
do, John? If I was king of the world, John, you know, if I was king of the world,
right, okay.
Big swinging dick, you know. You know, if I was a big swinging dick, king of the world.
BSD,
you know what I'd
man.
Do
BSD.
Right. I would. You know what I'd do, brother? I mean, and sisters out there, and don't take this bad, but you better take it however you want.
Okay.
If I was moving this horrible war machine out of Afghanistan,
yeah.
the first
right.
thing I'd do, I wouldn't take the remaining 2,500 and NATO out all at once. No. I'd have
mm-hmm.
a safe way, call maybe airplane, convoy airplanes or which one's boycotting Georgia? Delta? Is it Delta Airlines?
Well, Delta's headquartered in Atlanta, yeah.
Yeah, and aren't they boycotting? Aren't they doing some sort of boycott or something at Atlanta?
Well, I think they've made it clear they don't abide by that.
By the voter laws.
The voter
voting. Laws.
Yeah, I think Delta's smart.
Well,
they got to do that.
Yeah, well, here's what I do, because I'm king of the world. I'm smart, too. I'm smarter than DeSantis.
Right.
You know what I do? I'd hire Delta immediately. Every fucking jet they got, airliner. And I would have them landing. I would have them landing daily in Kabul, and maybe they built some tarmac. Lay some tarmac out in the opium areas, you know, where the Taliban stay.
Okay.
And drop those Delta airliners in there, and said every woman in the country of Afghanistan or the provinces. It's a free ticket out of this goddamn hellhole, because I'll tell you what, that's the best. You get the women and the girls and the kids out of that motherfucking country, and then them fucking patriarchal sick motherfuckers in the Taliban and Al-Qaeda won't have anything to stick their dicks in anymore. They won't have any kids
anymore. Oh, my God. Okay, here we go. Okay.
And these sons of bitches will fucking straighten up, man.
Oh, boy. You know, I don't know. If you were king of the world, that would be pretty interesting. Well,
I'll just tell you that.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It's yours. I mean, that was my big... You inspire me, John. That's the first thing I thought. I'd just let all the women get the... Get the fuck out of that place, man. What do you want to say?
Well, you know, all you got to do is turn that over to Sean Hannity, because I listened to Sean. No, it wasn't Sean Hannity. It was my man Tucker Carlson. He's on the carpet for something, and he was defending himself very pathetically last night. But he has this argument I forget the guy's name, but this bearded Irish reactionary that he gets every now and then. Well, the guy wasn't buying it.
Okay.
Tucker's argument. And Tucker's argument was that the United States, or the Democrats, it's the Democrat Party, not the Democratic Party, the Democrat Party is doing this as a conspiracy. They are allowing all sorts of people to come across the border in Texas into our culture, these immigrants, because they want them to vote, and they're going to increase the voting body, and they're going to make it so the Republicans can never win, you know. Immigration has nothing to do with, as front page story on the New York Times Magazine points out, and I got to read it, is that you can't divorce the current situation, especially Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador, and places that Nicaragua isn't in this group for some reason, but especially Honduras, that all these people are fleeing to our border. You can't divorce that pressure and dynamic from U.S. foreign policy against Central America, starting in the 70s and 80s and whatnot.
Right.
That's now becoming quite evident. You know, we helped turn the basket case already of Honduras into an even worse, horrific basket case. You know, we exacerbated the conditions there that are driving people to our border. I mean, that's pretty clear. Here we are. And so what does Tucker goddamn Carlson say? He says that, this has nothing to do with all those people fleeing, being murdered and whatnot by the drug dealers and whatnot that have been ironically empowered by our drug war, that no, it's not that dynamic. It's that, the Democrats are luring them up here in order to eventually, you know, turn them into citizens so they'll be Democratic voters, you know. Garbage. Horseshit.
Yeah.
The man should be embarrassed. I mean, even this reactionary Irish character that he gets on there couldn't buy it. You know, he says, well, Tucker, that's crap, you know. And so poor Tucker's, you know, spinning around trying to work his way out of this quicksand that he's got himself in, and then he just gets deeper and deeper, you know. I mean, what a jerk. I hate to say it, but anyway. I'll say it anyway.
Oh, it's right. Go ahead. I mean, but what is sick about this is how many fucking American-made guns. And this goes back to my visit last night. I'll be real quick. The guy also, we got the gun thing going again. You know, the outreach, just like Obama, Biden taking our guns away. They're coming. And I was like going, geez. I told my brother, I said, come on, man. I mean, and he says, well, what do you, he says, I want I said, what's wrong with universal background checks every time you buy one? Or every time you get, anyone gives you a gun, you both got to go get, you know, one of you got to.
Yeah, maybe give you a 48-hour cooling off period so you don't kill home and kill your wife away.
I'm bigger than that. I told him, I said, no, what's wrong with a 30-day waiting period? Grandpa wants to give you.
Yeah.
Well, I'm serious. Yeah. Grandpa wants to give you a fucking gun. You've already got so many goddamn guns. You've damaged your kids' ability to go to college. You can barely. You're leveraging yourself out for a new home. You know, you're going to build a new home, and you're in debt. You know, you're going
to build a whole new
debt,
wing to hold your gun.
Right, he'll probably have a basement, a concrete bunker, you know, for all these guys. You know, but I mean, he's a good guy. Don't get me wrong. And I told you, he's a brother, but I had to be his big brother. I had to be his big brother. Mm-hmm. You know, I had to say, hey, man, I got to tell you. What is wrong with this? You know, if your grandpa's giving you a gun, you get a background check. You know, and he says, well, I said you got to have background checks at these goddamn gun shows. He says, well, we already do. And I go, no, you don't. You know, and it's instantaneous. You know, and there's all kinds of chances for internet fraud at a gun show. You know, you're dealing with
fraud. Yeah.
Oh yeah, cyberspace, and I mean, come on, you know, if you were a convicted felon of you did 9 years in prison for killing your wife, you could go in with your buddy, and your buddy could buy the gun, and he could just walk over and give it to you on the way out the door. The gun. That's the truth. That is the legal truth.
Well, of course it is.
Everybody that gets a gun from anybody gets a background check. He said, well, if you put it that way. And I said, and what about carrying $1 million in insurance, you know, and training every year if you're going to carry a concealed gun? You have to go to a training. I mean, I'm 66 years old. I don't think I can fucking carry a concealed weapon and competently use it in a shootout at a gas station. I'm serious. I mean, I have to be reminded of that every year. Every year I need to be, well, I'm all for training. I said, well, why aren't you for the insurance? Why aren't you for the insurance?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean,
like,
people have raised this. You know, we have to have insurance by law. They put a gun to your head. By law, you have to have insurance for operating a motor vehicle on the street. And it makes sense, you know, because they cause a lot of damage. Well, hello, you know, why don't, you know, we make people buy liability insurance when they buy a gun? I mean.
Right. I mean, it makes sense.
There's a real logic to that. Yeah.
Yeah. Said, well, you know, it's still $100,000. Even if you shoot somebody and you were in your room, you need, you know, $100,000 in legal fees. That's what the insurance is for, to protect you in case you do get I don't know if it's rightfully, but you kill somebody in a shootout and you're found not guilty. You're still going to need a lawyer that's going to cost you.
Even if you have stand your ground laws like in Florida, you know, you still have to have a lawyer. Yeah,
and check this out. What about the people that might get seriously injured from a ricochet in a shootout? Who's going to pay for those medical expenses, guy, my buddy?
Exactly. Good point.
So you're going to let some poor schmuck who has no health insurance or limited have to. We're going to end up, I said, you and me as taxpayers are end up going to have to pay for that emergency room and all that medical care.
Absolutely.
Just because a bullet ricocheted and you know, when you really look at it that way, you get them in a corner, and that's the only way they're going to, they wiggle, they squirm. Yeah, I got, you know, $10,000 worth of guns and ammo in my basement. Yeah, I got a right to do all this. But they have no excuse for any. There's no way for them. Responsible, conservative, Republican or whatever, conservative gun owners to refute those things. Insurance liability.
Well, but then of course, at the end, when they're out of all other peaceful options, they say, over my dead body, are you going to get these things? They actually turn to the guns and say, well, come and try to get them. You know, top of the world, Ma, come get me, coppers, you know, and all this. Really. So, you know, disarming people is a frightening thing, so cops would rather not do it, you know. I was going to make a horrible joke, but I'm not. How about the absurdity of the situation now in Minneapolis? You know, they've got this unbelievably ridiculous trial going where everybody saw the 9-minute video by a 17-year-old brave girl. I mean, what more evidence do you need? You know, if the man had been just an ordinary black guy and he'd knelt on somebody's neck like that and somebody videotaped it, you know, the trial would be 10 minutes long, you know, and they'd put him away, life without parole. You know, but no, we got to go through this thing for weeks and days, you know, and, you know, you get 15 doctors who all say, you know, that, it was the police active action that killed him, you know, and then the defense will come up and say, oh, no, he died of a heart attack. Well, bullshit, you know. He would not have died of a heart attack if the guy had not stepped on his neck for 9 minutes. You know, I mean, it's preposterous, these arguments that the defense is allowed to raise, because it's high profile. There's money involved, and money simply extends the justice, you know, to the level of absurdity. Also, often. So here we are witnessing this trial, and suddenly, you know, some goddamn female cop shoots a 20-year-old, innocent, unarmed black kid. He's not 21, he's a boy. And, you know, it's like, fuck, you know. This woman, you know, oh, it's an accident. Oh, I thought it was, well, you've been on this force 26 goddamn years, and what has that experience done for you? If you look at the video, it seems to me the tall black cop is dealing with this kid, you know, older black man, young black kid. And this woman, who I think is white, comes up. She may outrank the black cop. I don't know. She comes up, and it seems she's inserting herself in, trying to, you know, take control in some way of this kid. And it's an interaction with the black cop, so that suddenly the interaction is between the two cops, and the kid takes this, oh, shit, this is a distraction opportunity. I can jump back in the car and dash off. It seems to me, again, I don't know, this is only my speculation, looking at it about three times, that it's the interaction with the cops that lead to this, and then she doesn't know what to do, and she shoots him, and it's an accident. It's not an accident. It's incompetence is what it is. And you almost wish that we could have get away from this polarized, cops and black males and all this sort of craziness, and actually look at these incidents for what they really are. And in that case, it was cops that totally, you know, stopped the guy for, amongst other things, having an air freshener hanging from his mirror, you know? And it's like, you got to be kidding me. And out of that, he ends up dead, you know? Unbelievable. And, of course,
That's your answer. Why would we not expect Brian? Tattoo it on your forehead. Your revolution is over, Mr. Lebowski. Condolences. The bomb's lost. My advice to you is to do what your parents did. Get a job, sir. The bombs will always lose. Do you hear me, Lebowski?
Shut up and get a job.
How was your meeting, Mr. Lebowski?
Okay.